Qualifying the borrower. The main factor that lenders look for when analyzing the applicant's current employment is stability. Employment stability directly affects the borrower's future income and ability to repay the loan. Applicants with questionable employment histories must have offsetting financial strength in order to be acceptable for the best financing programs. Although closely intertwined, mortgage lenders review income and employment differently. Employment is analyzed to ensure that qualified income will continue. Income is analyzed to determine whether it is sufficient to handle the loan payment obligations. Employment qualification. Conforming lenders typically require 2 full years of stable employment, preferably in the same field and company. Non-conforming lenders may accept significantly less, with some programs accepting borrowers with only a 2-month job history. Loan originators will normally verify the applicant's employment stability with 5 documentation requirements. Verification of employment, VOE, is documented by current and, when applicable, previous employers from the most recent 2 years. Tax returns. W-2S for the past 2 years. Pay stubs for the past month. IRS 4506-T. There are exceptions to the 2-year requirement, as well as additional requirements for special employment situations. Recent job transfer, still accounting for a 2-year employment history. Employment in a field in which advancement is possible because of continued demand for that kind of service. School and military, income qualification. There are 2 models to determine the borrower's monthly income. Conventional conforming guidelines state that, in order for income to be used for qualification purposes, it must be considered stable income. Stable income is defined as being the borrower's gross monthly income from all verifiable sources that can reasonably be expected to continue for at least the next 3 years. It is impossible to predict future employment or income. However, the most recent 2 years of employment history is considered a reliable indicator of future employment and income stability. Two-thirds rule. The two-thirds rule asserts that 2 years of recent history is a valid indicator that employment and income can be reasonably expected to continue for the next 3 years. The 4 R's. The second model used to determine the borrower's monthly income is the 4 R's. Is the employment and income considered regular, recurring, received in cash, and reasonable? Employment and income meet the requirements of the 4 R's, are considered stable and reliable for qualification purposes. Types of employment. Conventional conforming guidelines break income down into 3 categories: employed, self-employed, and non-employed. Employed income is from a borrower's employment and can include salary, overtime, bonus, and commission. Employed income includes not only the borrower's base pay, but also any overtime, bonus, or commission income that the borrower earns. Self-employment brings an additional layer of risk to the loan. Self-employed borrowers have to be concerned about not only meeting their personal financial obligations, but also those of their businesses. In slow times, they might have to use some of their own funds to pay company debts. Maximum financing generally is not appropriate for borrowers who have owned a business for less than 2 years. Non-employed is a term used to describe borrowers who receive their income from sources other than employment, such as interest and dividend income, retirement income, Social Security, food stamps, or foster care payments. This income is considered passive because in most cases, the borrower is not actively involved in creating that income on an ongoing basis. The key to acceptable income is stability and documentation. Income must be stable and fully documented as such. However, unstable income can still be acceptable under certain circumstances. Acceptability is rooted in the employment source and documentation of the income. As long as the income is derived from an acceptable employment source and that income is documented and verified, then the income is normally acceptable. Calculating long-term debts and housing payments. After compiling gross monthly effective income, the applicant must calculate total long-term debts. The projected personal housing payments are considered elements of the applicant's long-term debts. The goal is to calculate the monthly payments for all long-term debts. Any debts that will take 10 or more monthly payments to pay off are considered long-term debts. In this step of the income qualifying process, 4 long-term debts must be calculated. Projected housing payments. This is the principal, interest, taxes, and insurance, PATI, payments for the applicant's home. If the mortgage loan is for a home purchase, the projected payment for that loan is calculated in this item. If the loan is for an investment, non-owner-occupied property, the payment for that loan is not included here. Instead, it is considered in the above rental income calculation. Installment debts. All installment loans that will have at least 10 more payments must be included in this calculation. This line item includes student, car, and personal loans. Revolving debts. All credit card and other revolving debts must be included in the calculation, as long as there is a balance on the account. The current minimum monthly payment indicated by the creditor is used as the monthly payment requirement. Other debts. Other liabilities that do not fall into any of the above categories, but will continue for at least 10 more months, must also be included. This category would include child support, alimony, separate maintenance, negative rental income, and civil judgments. If the applicant's DTI ratios do not meet the loan program requirements, he or she has the following options. Change the requested loan. The most apparent option is to lower the loan amount, which would lower the monthly housing payments. This may mean making a bigger down payment or buying a smaller house. The applicant can also look at other loan programs with lower interest rates. Lower debt payments. Related to the preceding option is trying to lower the monthly payments on the applicant's non-housing debts. These options may include paying off personal debts, paying them down to within the 10-month limit, refinancing debts with personal loans, or renegotiating a payment plan. Please note that refinancing current debt with a consolidation loan creates a new monthly obligation that must be calculated into the new DTI ratio. Increase income calculations. The hardest option is to increase one's income calculation. However, it may be worth reviewing one's income calculation to see if there were any uncounted income, such as bonuses, dividends, interest, and seasonal income. Please note that refinancing current debt with a consolidation loan creates a new monthly obligation that must be calculated. Analyzing assets. Lenders review borrowers' assets to analyze their eligibility in two areas. To confirm that the applicant has sufficient assets to meet closing costs and program reserves guidelines. To verify that such assets are acceptable, the accumulation of assets demonstrates how well the borrower has used his or her income, while the record of liabilities shows how well the borrower has handled debt. A negative net worth generally means that the applicant is over-leveraged, over-borrowed, and could result in rejection. Mortgage loan applicants do not have to disclose all assets, just enough to qualify. The applicant must show sufficiency in two areas. Liquid assets. The borrower must verify sufficient liquid, cash, or easily cashed assets for any down payment, closing costs, prepaid expenses, and reserve requirements. The reserve requirement for home buyers is usually 2 months of PD, principal, interest, taxes, and insurance. For investment properties, the reserve requirement is typically 6 months. The primary source of documented liquid assets for most applicants is the applicant's bank account balances. Hard assets and net worth. The borrower should demonstrate positive net worth. For most borrowers, hard assets must be counted to establish positive net worth. Non-financial assets such as artwork, coin, or stamp collections that require an appraisal and/or liquidation may not be included in reserves. Neither may stocks or notes/loans receivables from a privately held company. Cash deposit toward purchase. With purchases, buyers are normally required to make a large deposit to secure the purchase contract. This deposit is usually called the earnest money deposit and is held by the seller's agent. This deposit is credited toward the applicant's liquid asset requirements. Loan originators will typically require the following items to confirm that the funds used for the earnest money deposit are acceptable: a verification of earnest money deposit, VEMD, completed by the agent currently holding the earnest money; the canceled check used for the down payment, if it has been processed by the applicant's bank and returned to the applicant. This shows that a deposit was actually made. Copy of bank statement showing the source of the bank funds. Cash gift. Gifts from relatives are normally acceptable sources of funds, with restrictions. When gift funds are being used, the loan originator will require additional items to verify that the funds are acceptable. Gift letter. The gift letter must come from a qualified donor, relative, and must clearly state 1. The relationship between the borrower and donor, and 2. That no repayment is expected or implied. Gifts are equity credits from the builder or seller are not acceptable gift funds. Donor source documentation. The donor must demonstrate that they have the funds to give as a gift. Copies of the donor's bank or asset statements for the accounts from which the gift funds will be drawn must be provided. Copy of gift check. The applicant must make a copy of the gift check provided by the donor. Seller contributions. Contributions are basically broken down into two different categories. Financing concessions. Any closing costs normally paid by the property purchaser, which are paid by an interested party to the transaction. An interested party in the transaction is defined as being an individual, such as a builder, developer, sales agent, or seller of the property, who stands to gain something from the sale of the property. Sales concessions. Inducements to encourage the borrower to purchase a property. Conventional underwriting guidelines define closing costs normally paid by the borrower as being items such as buy-down funds, discount points, closing costs, application fee, HOA fees, transfer tax, attorney fees, survey, title insurance, origination fees, etc. The amount of financing concessions is restricted to 3% for LTVs over 90%, 6% for LTVs above 75% but below 90%, 9% for LTVs 75% or less. Investment properties, 2% regardless of LTV. Any amount paid by the seller over and above the allowed financing concessions, or for prepaids, would be considered a sales concession. Also, items such as automobiles, boats, fur coats, decorating allowances, vacations, furniture, and other giveaways are considered sales concessions. The value of the sales concession must be deducted from the sales price. The adjusted price is then used to determine the loan to value, but the down payment is calculated based on the full sales price.